Welcome everybody to the Mod Pod. I know it's been almost a full 18 months, actually, like a legitimate 18 months since we last got together. And ironically, the last time we got together, it was the day before January 6th. So it was January 5th.
I think it might have actually been January 6th. Now that I think about it, because I think you and I were actually. Because I was supposed to go back to D.C. and I ended up staying at my parents' place for the holiday because it legitimately wasn't safe to travel back to the Capitol. So,
we had somewhat tongue-in-cheek mentioned that somebody was more than likely going to do something crazy or basically like hold your breath. But we would have never envisioned what happened actually happening. But we're back again. I had an idea to revamp the show to make it more comical, but just doesn't seem like anything's funnier than real life itself. Like you don't need to write jokes. Just talk about what's actually happening.
Someone actually tweeted, "How does SNL continue to exist when reality ends up being a much better live sketch show?"
I mean, for real, it really is. And you know, I wanted to make some jokes about Pelosi and things like that. But I mean, we'd be wasting your time if we didn't just talk about what everybody else is talking about. And I know some folks are used to me talking just sports or gambling and things like that. But I mean, I can carry a conversation about a lot of things. And criminal justice was my major, and so is yours. And we spend a lot of time in constitutional law classes and listening to lectures on case law and yada yada yada. So when we start talking about what we're going to talk about today, just know this isn't for us. This isn't a political based opinion. This isn't we don't have a vendetta. I think Trump is absolutely hilarious. I don't respect his intelligence to an extent, but I don't personally hate the man. Like, I don't have any issues with him as far as like making it personal. And Paul, you're the same way. So when we give our opinions on this, this is just our opinions. It's not politically motivated. So without further ado, we'll get into it. And I'm getting this from PBS.org. I thought they just had a better layout than everybody else. It's just a timeline of the events leading up to the FBI searching Trump's estate. You can literally Google PBS and Trump, and it'll take you to the same article that I'm using as my source. This all started mid-January of 2022 this year, where 15 boxes of presidential records were retrieved from Trump's Mar-a-Lago.
It's not personal, but that was not a Freudian slip, huh?
Yeah. It was an accident. It was 15 boxes of presidential records. A Trump representative had told them back in December 2021 there were records in Florida nearly a year after he left office. And the agency, under federal law, said that all the records had to be preserved. And so they started that process. So we start with former President Trump doing essentially what's right. Like, he's more or less a self-report, and they said they need those documents, and he's like, okay, cool, right? Trump called the discussions collaborative and respectful, big words from him, and says it was a great honor. That's more like what we're used to hearing from him. And his representatives told the agency that they would keep looking for more presidential records. So a lot of what the president does just in everyday life, not even like decisions that they make, but just any little thing, like the National Archives and Records likes to preserve every single thing. So this isn't abnormal. This is basically the way it's always been. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, it's like many things we have come to find when it comes to the Trump administration, both good and bad, is that they always start out working right within the bounds of exactly what a president has done or what a politician has done and has always done. That's always how this starts. But not to do too much of a spoiler, but and correct me if I'm wrong, but it always seems that Trump has been sort of the first politician in a while to blatantly see how far he can stretch the rules, operating within those bounds, knowing, okay, this is what everyone's done. Let's see how close to a gray area I can operate before it starts to set off any alarm bells. That's at least the way I've seen this anyway.
And I've personally always viewed it as just somebody who doesn't necessarily know the decorum of the office that he holds. Like, I mean, he's run companies and things like that, but being president or quote unquote presidential, those are different aspects. That's a different way. He's not a career politician. So he doesn't carry himself like you would expect somebody who's been a governor led into a senator or House of Representative and then became president type thing. Like, he hasn't had that same political trajectory as former presidents in the past have had. And I think that plays into a lot of who he is and how he rubs people the wrong way. And some folks are turned on by that and they support that. But the status quo amongst politicians generally don't like that. Like, they don't like people that are not of I guess their standards per se. So I would
only want to interject to say that I think this is where we're seeing one of the core differences. The stereotype we have in this country of politicians are basically the two-faced aspect, that they act one particular way towards you, but ultimately at the end of the day, it's phony and they act another way. Mm-hmm. The glaring difference that we see with Trump, like what I mentioned before, is the bad aspects of him a lot of times have been done by other politicians. But there's this unspoken rule that you have to follow a certain protocol and you have to act a certain way and do certain things. And Trump is just blatantly doing them out in the open. Now, somehow that has played as a positive with a lot of his base because they add that to his authenticity. Yeah. In other words, they're saying the person that you're seeing is the real guy. But and, the response is, well, politicians do it all the time and then they lie about it. It's like, right, but the act itself is still bad. What he's doing is still negative just because he's like, it's the factor of the person who, in polite social situations, your de facto stance is always to be polite and reserved with people. And the guy who always likes to, claim himself as, because it's always a guy, as the alpha, or the guy who tells it like it is the one who breaks that protocol. The one who just blatantly decides to say and do whatever he wants because he's kind of hoping, since everybody's operating on the unspoken rule, no one's going to push back against him. And I always sort of see Trump in that mix and have always seen him as sort of that, where he understands what the decorum is and he knows how to fake it. It's just, this is, we're seeing him at his core. He's just a rich guy who's never had to face any real consequences or repercussions for anything that he says or does. He's always been able to insulate himself just as much as a politician. The difference between him and a politician is he's never had to follow some kind of fake protocol. He's always able to just act and do whatever he wanted. And even becoming president, because that aspect to him was always an asset, why would he ever want to stop doing that? That's what made him popular. So, yeah. I mean, it's just that's the difference. But at their core, it's the same thing. He's no different than the career politicians, because career politicians are just insulated people who are so out of touch with reality and the common people that they just don't have a clue and they just try to fake it and just do whatever they want, really.
And generally, though, and to your point, generally, even career politicians have folks in their circle who reel them in to some extent when they go too far. It doesn't seem like anybody really reels Trump in. He just kind of does it his own way. And it's almost like a spoiled child to some extent, where everybody tells him what he wants to hear and tries to satisfy him and keep him happy. And then he's always kind of like, had everything in regards to his circle. He's never had a lot of people kind of interject and give him any kind of resistance to any actions that he does, for the most part. Even if you look at a lot of the testimony during January 6th, if you take into account the mood of a lot of the folks who were close to him, like Meadows and things like that. It just seems like more like it wasn't, it didn't all, it didn't come off as like respect. It came off as fear.
Oh, and, yeah.
And so in that particular aspect, to not to excuse the behavior, but just saying like he's never, nobody's ever really held him accountable and told him like, yo, you just can't do that. And there's been times, but for by and large, for the most part, he's always basically done it his way. And that appeals to his base for sure. And like you said, they generally consider that to be, hey, look, he's being genuine. But in the grand scheme of things, he is to some extent like every other politician.
Yeah. And the thing, the words you're looking for is the volatility.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference too. Like when you talk about that fear, you hit the nail on the head. That fear and that inability to keep him in check and hold him accountable for anything he does is it's almost like the effect of the Joker, mm-hmm. where it's like he'll either let you go or he'll kill you and anything in between. And that's kind of Trump, where if you kiss his ass, he'll open all kinds of doors for you, but he's going to eventually push you to the point where you're going to be in a situation where you have to do something that's ethically in a gray area.
Yeah.
And the minute you try to push back, he could explode on you and destroy your career, a la Jeff Sessions. He's such an unpredictably volatile guy. I understand where that fear comes from.
Yeah. And again, we're not saying these things like being like, oh, Trump's a bad person. He's in the grand scheme of things. I swear to you, he's no different in regards to morality. He's no different than pretty much everybody else that's come through the office. And so we're not, I mean, we did just rant a little bit about him in a negative way, but we're not holding that against him. That just is who he is. That's just who
he is. He's a product of circumstance. And I didn't happen to grow up in those circumstances. It's sort of the, on a lame level, it's like when you complain about an athlete who goes to another team for a really high payday, like, oh, well, what happened to loyalty with teams? It's like, well, have you ever been offered that much money before? Yeah. Your principles get quite, you know, become all of a sudden much more compromising once you get offered that kind of money. It's the same thing with growing up in that kind of wealth, where the ability to be accountable for things that normal people are accountable for just isn't there. Mm-hmm. And if you grow up in that environment from the very start and you're conditioned in that environment, how the hell are you supposed to expect to behave any differently when you're supposed to be serving regular people? You know, we don't think Trump is a good guy, but I think we've come to the understanding that he is a product of that. Any one of us could turn into that type of borderline sociopath if you are put in a position where money can buy you out of a whole lot. You're afforded a lot of legal protection. You're afforded a lot of insulation, and you're surrounded by people who convince you that everything you say and do is gold. You know, live in that environment for 70 years and then tell me how you turn out. I guarantee you it's not going to be far from that. Regardless, like the only reason you have the morals that you do is because of the environment you grew up in. Yeah. You put yourself in that environment, it's going to be a totally different thing.
So this is one of the things that I consider to be a fundamental error in Trump's entire presidency, and to me leads up to what we have going on today, is that people who probably should have said something in regards to, hey, this is the black and white area. There is no gray area here. We have to do it this way. They didn't speak up. February 18th, 2022, this year, classified information was found in 15 boxes, White House records that had been stored at his residency in Florida. The National Archives and Records Administration was aware of that. They revealed that in a letter responding to a congressional oversight committee. It was also confirmed that matter, the 15 boxes, was being sent to the Justice Department. Federal law. This is law. This isn't like this. Again, we're not at a partisan conspiracy theory yet. This is the law. Federal law bars removing classified documents to unauthorized locations. Trump could argue as president that he ultimately had authority on whether the documents were classified or not. And I think that is part of his argument, is saying that he did classify or declassify the documents. But either way, federal law prohibits unauthorized locations having classified documents. And so, again, this is back in February. He said that the National Archives were given the requested presidential records in an ordinary and routine process. 1 week later, on the 25th, they asked for additional documents from the National Archives. The House Committee on Oversight and Reform asked for additional documents as part of its investigation into Trump's handling of the White House records. That committee is chaired by a Democrat, Ms. Carolyn Maloney of New York. So again, now you can see where people would be like, oh, it's a conspiracy. They're out to get him. The committee's chaired by a Democrat. She laid out a series of documents that they needed to determine if the former president had violated records, the federal records law, when he took the boxes to Florida. That was back in February. Nothing much came out of that. Then we get into spring. Investigators from the Justice Department and FBI got more information about classified material taken to Florida. And then the federal officials also served a subpoena for some of the documents believed to be at the estate. That was back in spring. So if we're keeping track, starting back in January, you could even say February, he's had two chances to get this straight. Am I right? I think I might have lost Paul. Let me double check. Paul, you there? I think I lost him. But anyway, if you guys are keeping track, he has had two chances to get it together. And we're already in the spring at this point, and nothing has been done to alleviate the pending storm that's coming from the FBI. Paul, are you back yet?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he Here's the interesting thing, I think, to hear, at least both as far as the timeline goes and then sort of this inevitable fallout, is I genuinely can't tell if he just thought the issue would drop. Like, again, like, I don't know if you've ever seen did you ever see the movie The Wolf of Wall Street?
A little bit. Not the whole
thing. There's a scene in there where Jordan Belfort is meeting with a Swiss banker. And he is basically trying to get his laundered money put into a Swiss bank account, obviously where it's going to be, you know, protected. And he asks the Swiss banker, you know, basically like, what happens if you receive a federal subpoena? And the banker responds with, we basically use it as toilet paper and wipe our ass with it. And that, even though it's meant as like a joke line in there, I almost genuinely think that that's sort of how rich people view the federal government. Like, it's something where like there's always like leeway and exceptions when it comes to dealing with this type of stuff, when it comes to dealing with federal entities, because they have access to the money and the resources that they do. So it is fascinating to hear that he gets several chances to just comply with the damn subpoena or comply with what they're requesting, and he doesn't do it. You know, just that disregard. I mean, I can't tell if that's just again, you grow up in that environment, you get used to certain things. Like, it's what was it? The Chappelle Show sketch too, you know, where he's doing the reverse, where the drug dealer gets the rich person treatment and the rich person gets the drug dealer treatment. You know, they're really like, as funny as that sketch was, like, it illustrates a very important point that there is a general difference that money affords you when it comes to dealing with certain authorities. And so, I can't tell if that, what we're seeing is just a result of that.
And again, to his defense, man, he was the former, I'm trying to make it family friendly, but he was the effing president. You know? Mm-hmm. I would assume, hell, if I was the president, I would assume that, you know, I would be afforded certain leeway or different treatment. But to some extent, to me, it seems reasonable when, if you look at the timeline, there's been at least two attempts to get information or specifics, and nothing seems to have come out of it. And again, that was back in February and the spring of 2022. Fast forward August 5th, a search warrant was issued from the FBI. So, I mean, you still have about 6 months if you're going by the timeline to where something could have been done. And Trump had said that, you know, they could have asked without barging in, basically, and they would have got what they wanted. But to me, if I'm going by what's on this timeline of events, it looks like they did ask
several times.
Yeah.
And so, it's I mean, again, you this is I think when people said Trump was going to run, you know, the country like he runs his business.
Oh yeah,
he did. This is how he runs his business. This is how he does things. You know, like, it's on his own terms, and it's like he doesn't understand conceptually that when you become a public servant, the standards are totally different than when you're a CEO in the private sector. You know what I mean? Even when it comes to dealing with the federal authorities, there is still a general difference when you run a private enterprise. When you become a public citizen, you know, the information that you have, especially even when you're the president, you know, like, especially when he talks about later about how, oh, I declassified those documents, you don't have that authority. That authority and that classified information comes from the agency that collected it. They're the ones who have to dictate that because they're the ones who are responsible for it. Like, again, he doesn't seem to, this is where that bumping between what it means to be a public servant versus a CEO is. As a CEO, you get, I mean, the president of the United States is one of the most powerful people on the planet.
Yeah.
But I feel like there are still checks on him that CEOs don't necessarily have. And I don't think Trump is really used to that.
Yeah. And I will also say that I saw in my research or in my searches for like information, the New York Times post an article yesterday saying that a Trump lawyer told the Justice Department that classified material had been moved. And they have a declaration apparently that is signed by an attorney representing President Trump or former President Trump on a June 3rd visit. It says it was signed by J.I. Bratt. It was made let me restart that. So J.I. Bratt is one of the top counterintelligence officials. He was given a declaration signed by a attorney of President Trump, apparently, saying that all the classified documentation had been turned in. So that becomes important because if you look at the Espionage Act and all and the various things that he could be investigated for or charged, the main thing that led to this search warrant being issued was the fact that the FBI had probable cause to think that obstruction had taken place because somebody signed a declaration back in June. And then their mole that's there in the, on the property had said that he still got classified documentation. And when they come in August, they pulled out 11 boxes.
Yep.
So it looks bad. It looks bad. Yeah. And what I ultimately wanted to get to in this particular episode this week is that, like, when we talk about probable cause and we talk about, like, the rule of law and things, like, Trump has said these things. Republicans preach these things. Conservatives preach these things. Rule of law, yada, yada, yada. The rule of law says that probable cause has to be established in order for like something like this to take place. And if we're being honest, there is probable cause based on the timeline of events and the fact that somebody said on a declaration that, hey, everything's been turned in. They've asked twice for things. And you're telling them that everything's been turned in after they've already asked twice. And then they show up at your spot in August, and lo and behold, you got 11 more boxes. I mean, there's reports that, you know, they were looking for like nuclear weapon information and things like that. I mean, at this point, to me, it doesn't really matter exactly what he had there. Is that it shouldn't have been there according to the rules.
No, agreed. And I read an interesting, it was an interesting tweet that I think kind of speaks out to sort of the, or defines ultimately the Republican outrage in a lot of this, is that, you know, it seems to be that particularly in conservative circles, there's like two groups in this country, the group that gets protected by the law, but doesn't have to abide by it. And then the rest of the rest of us who have to abide by it, but aren't necessarily afforded the protections. And because they believe, you know, especially somebody like Trump to be in the former group, like this is where the outrage comes in, where it's like anybody else, this wouldn't even be a question, you know. And it's, as you said, it's like the rules are clearly stated. You have someone sign a legal document attesting to something almost essentially under oath. You know, especially if that document is notarized, you know, just as well as I do, like you put a notary on there, somebody's swearing under oath.
Yeah.
That what is put in that document is 100% true. And if you've got that notarized declaration stating that we've done this and you haven't done that, you've committed perjury.
Yeah.
Like that's not something that's taken lightly. You know, this is that's a huge problem. And again, I just, the haphazard way this seems to have been done, where he says he turned everything in, they sign the document and they just assume it's going to go away. And, you know, if whoever that mole is within Trump's family or whoever it was that ratted him out clearly seemed to have a stronger grasp of the implications of whatever was going on, that they felt compelled to do so. You know what I mean? Like that to me is the most interesting thing. Had that person not spoken up, that, I mean, you know what I mean? Like you hear about this in a lot of criminal cases where a person who is willing to take on that role of informant either believes themselves to be in hot water or has a stronger grasp of the situation where they realize that they're being put at a much bigger risk than they should. Like I had that theory with what happened with Alex Jones, with his attorney accidentally turning over that large of a volume of documents. Mm-hmm. The conspiracy theorist part of me wonders, did this attorney realize of how much incriminating information he was in possession of when he knew his client was basically committing perjury on the stand? And did he realize, well, I've got two choices. I either face a malpractice claim and potentially lose my license if it gets out that I was in possession of this, or do I do my due diligence as an attorney, turn it over and face the malpractice claim for my client? You know what I mean? Like you're stuck in a rock in a hard place anyway. And so I'm wondering if that's what that informant faced.
Yeah, and I'm not here to beat my chest or anything like that. But when you sign an oath or when you have a practice that holds you accountable, whether it be doctors or attorneys, like some practice that you have a duty to do things the proper way, like there's no excuse for an oversight like this. And given the legal team that he had to prove that the election was rigged, I question a lot of his attorneys, you know? Like
because it's only the joke attorneys, yeah, that are going to take on that level of reckless legal work. You know what I mean? Like the people who are going to defend Alex Jones in the case against, you know, the Sandy Hook parents are going to be the ones who are just incredibly incompetent, because any lawyer worth his salt is going to be like, no, dude, like you deserve to get sued for defamation. You spread false rumors that a shooting at a school didn't happen. And it did. Yeah. That's clearly defamation. Like in Trump's legal team's defense, it's like if you work for a guy like Trump, you are going to be asked to do a lot of stuff in ethical gray areas. And the only lawyers who are really comfortable with doing that sort of thing may not necessarily be the best lawyers.
Yeah. And with our last like 10 to 15 minutes, we can get into the realm of what if, what could be the speculation. And I will start it off by saying I have done a deep dive on QAnon, and Paul will tell you, you might even can go back and find our old podcast. Like, I did my due diligence on that conspiracy theory, and I was on the message boards and everything, you know, like really doing quote unquote investigative type work. I talked to people who believed in it and everything, and gotten their opinion. So I take everything with the open mind, pretty much. Even if I think you're batshit crazy, I'm still going to listen to some extent. I have an issue with anybody thinking that this is a political hit job, because if there's one thing that Trump has shown over the course of his entire political career, nothing can stop him. Nothing can really stop him. Every negative news, every negative thing becomes an asset for him. It becomes a rallying cry for his base. So this isn't like to think that somebody would do something, Biden or the Democrats would do something like this in order to kill Trump's chances of running for president again is ridiculous. Look at the response of the investigation and stuff. Like, there hasn't been one negative thing said about him from anybody within his base or who was already on his side, except for the same people who place blame on him for January 6th. And those people are getting voted out. So again, on the grand scheme of things, there's nothing hurting him. Nothing hurting him. My second issue with a lot of the conspiracy theories is the optics that something like this gives. You have a federal agency investigating a former president, not even former, a recent president. Mm-hmm. Some of these people were hired, appointed by him, are investigating him for breaking a law. And this is like just the optics of that just doesn't, like I told somebody earlier today, nobody wins in this situation. Trump doesn't win. The people investigating him doesn't win. The country doesn't win. Like, so in order for you to pull the trigger, in order for somebody that was appointed by him to go to a judge and get a warrant.
Yeah.
In order for that judge to find probable cause enough to send the FBI to that residency, it speaks volumes of what people really thought might have been going on there. So there's that. And then just in general, I don't respect the Democratic Party enough to think that they could conspire with anything. They can't even get their damn policies passed.
No, agreed.
So how could they do something so great? Like, I really think, and I told somebody this today, I really think that when you talk about far left and far right, I think that both sides don't really have a good grasp of what the other side is truly capable of. So they just fabricate all these stories and these extremes because it justifies their actions. And I'm like, have you really sat and like listened to like left, like far left people or far right people? They all sound like nutty. So I don't know, but at the end of the day, I think people who felt duty bound are doing their duty. I'm not a back the blue. Is that you, Trump? I'm not a back the blue type person per se, but I respect people who are in these positions that still carry out their duty in the face of like what would be essentially career suicide. So, Paul, what are your thoughts on people's opinion on the like, I guess the Gestapo, the conspiracy theories, all the crazy things that people have been saying? And did I lose him again? I might have lost him again. Let's see what we got. Anyway, just to keep it going, I just try to operate off of logic, me personally. And like I said, from talking to people who would be considered extreme on both sides, it's just really, it really makes no sense what they think about the other side in relation to this particular incident. So, Paul, what is your take on this idea that this is a political hit job?
Sorry, I know for some reason, the feed on my end kind of was cutting in and out. I do agree with you, at least as far as the political hit job stuff goes. Like, the rumor that I actually read was that the Biden administration wasn't even aware of what was actually going on with the FBI.
They didn't even know Pelosi was going to Taiwan, so they're going to know about what that.
Well, right, exactly. I was going to say, and to the theory that I've always had with, especially with Trump, because you're right about the publicity, but the one thing that always has to be in there is that Trump has been able to skate by, and Trump has always been able to come out on top because there was always that aspect of plausible deniability. Like, let's be real. Despite what happened on January 6th, from a criminal law standpoint, given the standard of beyond reasonable doubt, he was never going to be charged in January 6th. Anything that they would have done to put him and charge him on January 6th, they were never going to get a conviction. They could never meet the beyond a reasonable doubt standard, because any aspect of that you could try to attribute to Trump, you, like, what are they going to charge with? Inciting the riot? Why? Because he amped up the fake, you know, the fake election and all that type of stuff. So did a whole bunch of Republican senators and a whole bunch of people on Fox News. Ultimately, you could always find another explanation as to why people stormed the Capitol. Even though we all know that Trump was at the center of it, you could pin the blame on who really incited people that much to the point where they would do something like that on a whole bunch of people. So because of that, Trump was always able to have that arm's length, that plausible deniability, that loophole. What's so interesting to me about the fact, and I was talking with one of my roommates who actually works for Congress and, you know, saw the thing break on the news and we were talking about it, was, you know, it kind of reminds me of the quote from the Wire, that if you come at the king, you can't miss, or you better not miss. And that's sort of the mentality I feel like the Bureau would have with something like that with Trump, where if you go after him for something and there's nothing there that could stick or that could meet that criminal standard, you are creating a whole range of martyrdom that you could put that man in, where it's really going, as you said, going to end up being an asset to him. Just like the Russia investigation stuff, just like everything else. Ultimately, the end result of it was you don't really have a unifying response as to what his level of responsibility was. So for them to even execute this and like you said, approach the judge, struck me as very significant, because for them to make that very calculated move, they had to be almost 100% certain there was something there. This couldn't be like the January 6th stuff, which is ultimately speculative and stuff where it's like not a he said, she said, but you know what I mean? Like, where it's, you know, it's secondhand stuff and people giving their own theories. You actually would have factual evidence in this particular case that he was in possession of stuff that he shouldn't have been in possession of. And lo and behold, he did. So, you know, I remember the press has always been pressing Merrick Garland on, you know, are you going to bring charges against Trump on January 6th, or are you going to do this? And I'm wondering if Garland's vague answer was vague because he kind of had a suspicion in the background that the feds were working on something. And if I'm Garland, I'm damn sure going to be backing him on something like this than potentially trying to bring charges against January 6th. Because in this case, like you said, they go in and they find 11 boxes of hard evidence of classified information. And the fact that Trump has backpedaled so much on the documents they did find, he's gone from, you know, this is political, to there's nothing there, to, oh, if it's there, the FBI planted it, to, oh, well, whatever's there is declassified anyway, to what about Obama, to Fox News going, well, you know, sometimes, you know, everybody brings home work, you know, like, it's, they've backpedaled so much to the point where I'm thinking, yeah, they've got something. Like, for them to change that tune and to go through that entire arc in 72 hours is really impressive. So the thing I'm curious about is what happens now, because I think they clearly have him boxed. And this is a much more precarious situation for him than I think January 6th ever would have been.
Yeah, and that's what I had been telling somebody too, is that this isn't like as circumstantial or as vague as the January 6th stuff. Like, this is something that's a little bit more tangible, something that is obviously very serious. And again, with this timeline and the pattern of them asking for things, and then the fact that a judge found probable cause enough to issue the warrant, that people who were essentially associates of the president when he was president are now looking to investigate him. It just gives a different vibe. And
Agreed.
I will end with this in saying that I don't want to see what one I've said to somebody before too, that Trump's too old to go to jail. I know everybody's like, he's gonna get locked up, lock him up. You don't put people that age in jail any damn way. So like that's ridiculous. Don't do that. Don't even consider that. You can hold him accountable. You can bring him to justice to some extent if it's truly something that is serious. But for the most part, I would say, the FBI isn't going to move in this manner. People are not going to move on somebody like Trump as a former president, a recent former president, without doing their due diligence. So in that aspect, I trust their judgment that it was something that they deemed serious to take these kind of steps. But as far as what should happen, I mean, most of me thinks that we need to wait and see exactly what, I mean, they're going to tell us the exact documents, but the severity of said documents that was still held, if there was anybody within his circle or even the president himself, which I highly doubt again, but if somebody had maybe given that information out to a third party or something like that, those types of things need to be looked into. But Trump going to jail should not happen. All right. I don't expect it to happen. I don't even expect anything to really come out of this. And his ass is still announced that he's running in 2024 and be just fine. Like, nothing stopped this man ever. And so why would anybody think that this is any different? I don't understand why people are so big on protecting his image when he's never hurt him.
I think, and I can probably end on this larger question because someone had speculated this. Like, I've obviously scoured like Twitter and all that type of stuff. And one of the more interesting opinions I heard is that he wouldn't get jail time, but there'll be a deal reached where he will agree basically to not run for public office again. And that will ultimately be the thing that, that'll be the end punishment. And someone had responded to that with, well, what leverage would he have? If they've got him cornered with all these documents, what cards could he possibly hold? And the question I would have is, I guarantee you he's got some dirt on some of the Republicans in either the House or the Senate from some of the stuff that they've maybe tried to do. That's where I could see it going if it gets to the point where it looks like he could face jail time, or that every legal expert in their salt is like, you really need to make a deal if they offer you one.
If it came down to it, I would assume they would make some kind of deal. Yeah, I could see the request for him not to run for public office to be made, more so just because
He's disqualified himself from doing so.
essentially, yeah.
He's disqualified. Like, that ultimately to me seems to be the ultimate punishment. And I feel like even a guy as outspoken as Trump, if he realizes how much in checkmate he really is, he would probably be willing to concede, oh, well, I can still make a whole bunch of money doing rallies and be, play kingmaker in the Republican Party. But the FBI is going to want something from him for that. Because they, and I guarantee you, like Gates, Jim Jordan, Josh Hawley, old Teddy Cruz, who's on the trail doing his stand-up comedy, sorry, his stump speeches, I guarantee you he's got some stuff on them. And Trump is, above all, really, really good about having a strong sense of self-preservation.
Thank you.
So
everybody thinks I'm crazy.
He will no. He, despite how reckless he is, even now, as it's reported that he's telling his supporters not to run in the not to vote in the midterms again. You know, he has a very strong sense of self-preservation, and so if he thinks throwing one of those Republican senators who supported him under the bus will save his butt, he'll do it. Again, look at Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions validated his campaign, and now essentially his political career is over. He couldn't even win a Republican primary against the former football coach for Auburn.
Yeah. God, Tubby.
Tommy yeah. Tuberville. Tommy Tuberville. So it's like, if any of the, like, the reason he's telling his supporters not to vote in the midterms, I think, is because he's trying to get more Republicans in Congress to pressure the FBI or pressure Biden or pressure somebody to, like, back off the investigation. And if they don't, you know, I could see Trump being vindictive enough to try to get his revenge by realizing, okay, well, I'm boxed into a corner. Who, I guarantee you, he knows something. And yeah, he will have no hesitation to start talking about it.
And one last thing before we leave. We gotta make an educated guess. Who's the mole?
I'm going to go with Don Jr.
Oh, what? No way.
One, because people have said he's been remarkably silent on the issue. And two, I think this is a situation where he's trying to make his power move. I think he sees it as I think this is his moment as the power move. This is him becoming the heir to the throne. This is the young son pulling the move on his dad where he goes, if you were me, you would do the exact same thing.
Dang, it's the kiss on the forehead and then the car explodes when he goes and gets in it.
Yeah, that's basically that's what I think this is. I think this is Don Jr. about to like thump his chest and be like, it was me.
I think it's Kushner or Ivanka in cahoots with Kushner. Kushner seems like the type of guy. Well, Kushner's, I think, dad or somebody else has some legal issues and stuff too. But he seems like the type to already be working with the feds anyway. And he also has a strong sense of self-preservation as well. And I think out of all the people who feel the most disrespected, it's probably him.
I can see that, although I keep harking back to to John Oliver's assessment of Jared Kushner, which is he goes, he's useless. He's a 6 foot tall stack of packing peanuts. Like, he's just useless. I don't see him having the spine, although in conjunction with Ivanka, maybe.
If there was anybody compromised enough to work with the feds, it would be Kushner, I think.
I think that would be a strong theory. Although I think I did like your I believe it was you who texted me the original theory that it was secretly the recently deceased wife who added a clause in her will on her deathbed as a call to her children to save the family name by ratting on the dad. And in the plot twist, it's all the kids.
Oh man,
that would be the best season finale cliffhanger ever.
And it's the type of ending somebody as extravagant as Trump deserves.
it is absolutely. But,
so we'll keep an eye on it this week. As you know, the feds sleep on the weekends apparently, but I'm pretty sure there'll be some hot news coming out Monday all week long. We will probably double back next week and talk about Nancy Pelosi and her trip to Taiwan and then whatever else might come up during the week that we might find funny or worth talking about. So this has been the return of the Mod Pod. This has been our episode on the FBI raid of Donald J. Trump. Mm-hmm.